We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, over there in New York City, at least for the moment, my good friend Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Ty, I feel like I've had a... What is it, like a B12, a vitamin B shot?
That you had the shot? People. Was that what Rafael Palmeiro had back in the day?
I only want to talk about the future, Ty. I don't want to talk about the past.
Okay, fair enough.
But if I'm talking about my specific past, Jody with an I and the Solid Baby made their way to Chicago, which is where I'm going shortly after recording this. So I was solo watching all of the games. The primetime games were kind of decided pretty early. Didn't stay up for Pac-12 after dark. Watched Wazoo, Utah this morning. And I feel like I have a new lease on life, Ty. And you know what? It's kind of thematic for week 5. I felt like in a lot of different spots, a very nice bounce back place.
Nice bounce back place. So first and foremost, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about the North Carolina game here a bit after we get through reverbs, but North Carolina, look at North Carolina's remaining games, and suddenly 6 wins and a bowl feels very attainable. We had a really nice showing, a neck crack game, I'd say. Just a game that Michigan needed, even though it was against Rutgers, still to put up 52 on an opponent was a big deal. There are a bunch of other games, I think you're right, that it is very thematic. Just this new lease on life as we make it through the woods of college football's 5th week.
Yes, and as we get into the reverbs, I'd like to point out that somebody submitted in when we asked for a dude alert near the end of the day, and this will probably help to explain what the reverbs will be like today. Somebody nominated Nebraska fans holding on to their balloons into the third quarter, as is tradition to release balloons upon, I think, the first touchdown of the game for Nebraska, maybe its first score. As a dude, as a collective dude, and I think that informs what you're about to hear pretty well.
On that note, we had reverbs. We had a number of folks call in a 408-VERBAL-1. That's 408-837-2251. Our boy Ryan cut those up, put together a brief segment. You know it. We love it. Call the reverbs. Have a listen.
There's 10:15 left in the fourth quarter. Oklahoma is beating Texas Tech 48-13. And Gus Johnson is giving us a movie review and synopsis of Ad Astra. I think this should be a thing. Gus Johnson reviews films in-game.
Hey, this is Grant calling from Auburn, Alabama.
Aloha, this is Dallas from Honolulu.
This is Forrest in San Antonio, Texas.
This is Ryan from Minnesota.
Hey, this is Andrew from San Diego.
Mike Loxley might know the DMV like the back of his hand, but he sure as hell doesn't know how to score a single point at home against Penn State. We are
Crab Cakes and losing to Penn State.
That's what Maryland does.
I never thought I'd say this, but I really miss Chase Garbers.
How many Hokies need to borrow out of their 401k in order to afford the Justin Fuente buyout?
Fuente just got fired.
After what Duke did to Virginia Tech under the lights on Friday night, we might need to consider that the only football coach better than Eric Taylor is David Cutcliffe.
The Texas A&M tradition of playing down to Arkansas and eking out an ugly win is alive and well.
This is Mike in College Station with a reminder to all Texas Aggies. Too much bacon causes heart attacks. That is all.
Arr, mateys! Today we're watching the Arkansas versus Texas A&M game. What a freaking game that was. I love this sport. I love this station. I love all you.
Woo! Woo! Go Michigan! Sure, it was against the horrifically bad Rutgers Scarlet Knights, but still, go Blue!
Do you have a bad offense? Does it seem like no matter what you try, things just aren't working? Try Rutgers and experience immediate relief.
I have a not-so-hot take for a very hot week. Is it time to break out Jamie Newman's Heisman campaign?
Minnesota might be the worst 4-0 team ever, but all hail Rashad Bateman.
I don't really know what to think about this Minnesota team, but Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson are total dudes. Row the boat.
Minnesota is 4-0. Rank the Gophers, you cowards.
Your team's lost a game in 2019. Can't relate. Stick 'em Bears, baby.
Notre Dame just beat a very good Virginia team in a tough spot by double digits, and the message boards are calling for Brian Kelly to be fired. Gotta love college football fans.
Why is a channel on my TV showing paint drying on a wall? Oh, wait. It's the Wisconsin Northwestern game.
What are you wearing, Badgers from Wisconsin?
Khakis.
The best defense in the country, the Temple Owls, shut out Jeff Collins in his return to Philadelphia. Go Owls.
I just want to know which one of DeMonta Smith's touchdowns is your favorite. Dude alert.
In-game dude alert for DeVonta Smith for Alabama. I'm hoping the joke gets better the more I repeat it.
Can we just go ahead and make DeVonta Smith a dude? 5 touchdowns in one game. Come on.
It wouldn't be an Alabama game, though, without them missing a chip shot field goal. Oh, this is going to come bite us in the you-know-what down the road.
I don't think this has been used in a number of years, but could that have been a almost Clemson game?
Just got done watching that North Carolina-Clemson game, and let me tell you, I was getting nervous you were going to have to bring out of retirement.
I just watched the Fighting Mike Browns go for 2, and all I got to say about UNC's season this year, UNC is good. Bad? Good?
Is Nebraska back? No, they're not back.
Bo Nix is going to be a god.
You know what they say in Auburn? You know Bo. Nix?
Hey, Ty, TCU. Just want to let you know the key is still under the mat, so come over anytime you'd like.
Ah, there you go. Speaking of good neck cracks, it's always good to hear.
Yeah.
Hear the action on the voicemail line. Hello, welcome. Again, I'm Ty, he's Dan. That was our Reverb segment, which we play each and every Sunday when we recap the action. If you haven't yet subscribed to the Solid Verbal, please do so out on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast. Give us a star on Overcast if you like
the
show.
Oh, that'd be great.
That would be terrific. Or leave a review wherever it is you listen. Don't forget you can follow us on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And if you're a super verballer and you want to continue the conversation long after the final bell, go on out to solidverbal.reddit.com. Friend of the show, Peter, does a good job moderating the discussion. Right now, they're keeping track of all of our fantasy things, which I'm sure we're going to talk about here momentarily. It's a lot of fun if you like the show. So again, that's solidverbal.reddit.com. And if we miss anything and you don't have social media, solidverbal@gmail.com. We have emails that come through like endlessly. Mm-hmm. I'd love to reply to all of them. We don't have time, but we do appreciate everyone who writes in. We read all the messages, we promise you.
Yes.
We appreciate everyone's undying support for the show.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Shall we start with Clemson and North Carolina, Dan?
Sure. That feels like a decent enough place to start.
I think Clemson 21, North Carolina 20 is the appropriate place to start as we initiate recap coverage here after week 5. This came a bit out of left field. The point spread at one point was 28. I think before kickoff might have been 26 and a half, something of that ilk.
The home dogs were barking, Ty.
The home dogs were barking. We'll play.
The Yakos, home dog of the week.
And this wasn't officially my home dog of the week. That was Baylor, right, who we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show. But Clemson goes into the hornet's nest that is Keenan Stadium in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and wins by 1 point. Here is how this game went. First off, honest to God, like two plays into the game, the announcing team makes mention of the fact that Sam Howell has a little bit of Baker Mayfield in him. Which really set a nice tone for the game.
Yeah, of course.
Carolina had an honest-to-goodness chance of winning this one. It was tied 14-14 at half. Fourth quarter, Trevor Lawrence throws a 38-yard touchdown pass to T. Higgins with about 10 minutes left in the game. Clemson takes a touchdown lead. But then on the very next drive, Sam Howell, what with a little bit of Baker Mayfield in him, goes to work.
Yeah.
16 plays, 75 yards. It's a drive that eats up 8 minutes and 37 seconds of the game clock. It ends with a 1-yard touchdown run by Javonte Williams. That makes it 21-20.
Yes.
So if you're Mac Brown, Dan, what do you do here?
I love the move. I didn't like the actual call.
No, I didn't like the call.
Trying to beat Clemson to an edge with an option look is dicey, because there are only a number of things you can do from 2 yards out, and that's something that a lot of teams tend to turn to give themselves the option. It would have been nice if somebody were leaking into that corner, a tight end from the other side or something. I liked the call. I didn't like the actual play call, but it was good. I mean, the longer you go into overtime against a team who is vastly more talented, the less likely it is that you're going to come away with a W. So, great. One play.
Mac goes for two, as Dan said. Runs an option play, tried a little bit of misdirection, bringing a guy in motion, but suffice to say, it does not work. Sam Howell kind of pitches slash fumbles the ball backwards, and it was caught slash recovered, but it didn't work out. Clemson survives on the road. What I kept thinking here...
How do you not have like an interesting trick play for like, oh my God, this is the moment of all moments to take down a giant?
I know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I liked it, but...
The play call was a bit underwhelming. And what I kept thinking all throughout this game, and I checked at least twice to see who Clemson had on its schedule next week,
because
it felt like they were looking ahead to a bigger game. And each time I looked, I'm like, oh, they play in the ACC. Like, there aren't any bigger games. Are they looking forward to Wake Forest in mid-November?
Hey. Do not besmirch the Deeks on this program. Hashtag consider Wake.
Anyway... What do you have to say about this game, Dan? Did it catch you by as much surprise as it caught me?
It did, and North Carolina's shown themselves to be nothing if not competitive and playing with fight near the end of games, but it was an interesting tactic of they're sort of playing small ball.
Yeah,
they weren't trying to slaughter a giant going downfield. You know, they weren't trying to use Sam Howell to make huge plays. He didn't have a particularly good day, but he had good moments. And so they would come up big on defense on third and fives. They would come up big on, you know, fourth and four near the end of the game. I think their last drive to score the touchdown was like an 8-minute drive where they just kept converting third down. They took advantage when, one, Travis Etienne fumbled it early. Two, when Clemson just went away from Travis Etienne to sort of step on the gas in the second half. So they fully took advantage and made stops. I thought Trevor Lawrence had a below average game, even though he made above average throws. For him, I expected a little bit more. And it's we know Clemson's going to have a week like this. And it's on the road. It's maybe feeling a little too good about themselves. And North Carolina played with fight. They won the moments. And small ball almost came up very big for them. I just kept thinking about, was it David Eckstein? You know, the Angels just slapping hits,
this
stealing
is the,
bases.
The Ian Bookification of college football is what you're referring
God,
to.
Oh, God, that's such a bummer of a phrase. But yeah, they almost manufactured a win here, which would have been pretty impressive.
Carolina is now 2-3.
Yeah.
They're probably... not going to play this well consistently the rest of the way, but a quick look at their remaining schedule.
I like that. I mean, yeah, so maybe like Georgia Tech's terrible. Virginia Tech's looking pretty terrible. Duke has fight. Virginia's good. Pitt, who knows, especially with the quarterback situation. NC State looks pretty bad. And North Carolina's fine.
They're feisty, man.
Yeah.
I like them.
Yeah.
Some would say plucky. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's stay in the ACC. Let's talk about Notre Dame 35, Virginia 20. Notre Dame actually trailed 17-14 at half. It was not a great 30 minutes of football, to be honest. Mama H was texting me. I was, in turn, taking those texts, screen capping them, and putting them out on Twitter.
Yeah, as you should have been.
Bryce Perkins completes something like 82% of his passes in the first half, threw for 230-some-odd yards, had two touchdown passes. Pretty much the exact, the exact way that I expected the game to start. But then in the second half, it kind of followed along the same model as the Louisville game, where Notre Dame made some adjustments, and suddenly their defense turned in a dominating second-half performance. They finished with 8 sacks on the day. They forced 5 turnovers, including a fumble that was returned for a touchdown late in the third quarter. That sort of broke the game open.
Right.
Also, there was a long fumble return that didn't go for a touchdown, went down to like the Virginia 7. Did you see who returned that one?
Was it Tagovailoa I forgot his last name.
Myron Tagovailoa Amosa.
Amosa, yeah.
He is Tua's cousin.
Impressive run.
Impressive run. It set up the go-ahead touchdown that put Notre Dame up 21-17, something like that. So, you know, Virginia, I think, showed itself as a pretty good college football team, which we knew all along and expected to see here.
To what degree did that opening second half onside kick give you the willies?
It didn't.
Like, when
really.
It happened, they obviously got the stop, but it was like, oh my God, they're just going for it.
It didn't really, because first off, I love the call. If you're a Virginia fan, I love the call. Go for it on the road. Tough place to play. Do it. Go for it. Pedal to the metal. It didn't really surprise me because I was fully expecting a flat performance from Notre Dame. And by and large, that's what we got. So these are just the plays that happen when your team is coming off a loss against a Georgia squad. They're back home. I think everyone in the stadium, including Bronco Mendenhall, could sense that there was a flatness there. It didn't surprise me at all that he'd go for the jugular.
All right. Does this performance, I mean, I think they outscored basically Virginia 21-20 offense-wise. They get those two touchdowns, one directly, one basically directly off of the defense. Is that cause for concern? Is it expected flatness after Georgia? Is, you know, Virginia is a good team, so it's hard to say, like, oh, well, they should have been scoring 50 against the Hoos. No. Virginia's good, and they will probably finish the season as a top 20 team, even if they move out of the top 20 after yesterday. But, you know, when you stop the run like Notre Dame did, when you have some shots, when you have a running back running well, I don't know. A little disappointing to only get 21, I suppose.
For me, it skews more expected than concerning.
Okay. Fair enough.
I think there are elements of both. I expected the flatness. Always when you look at your squad, your team, I talk from a very first person personal standpoint.
Yeah.
And you know
Notre Dame tight end, Ty Hildebrand.
That's right. When you look out and you recognize that there were points to be had that they couldn't get, that's a problem. But, you know, we'll see what happens. They've got USC at home in 2 weeks. That'll be another good chance to kind of state their case as one of the nation's top teams. One thing quick before we move on here to Ohio State, Nebraska.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of this game you watched. Doug Flutie did something in this game that I absolutely have to put on our fantasy things list for 2020. You know the thing? He did the thing, Dan.
Just a deep French kiss.
No.
Okay.
Did the thing where he compared a player or series of plays to being like, quote, backyard football.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's sort of like the Brett Favre-ization of football analysis. Just looking he like did, a kid out there.
He did it with Bryce Perkins, and I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, yeah, you know, he's sort of backyardy out there. I don't mean that in a bad way, but sort of backyardy out there. And actually, it sort of fit. 35-20, Notre Dame wins at home.
Correct. And yes, the fact that they adjusted very well defensively in the second half, the fact that they completely hold down Virginia on the ground, which was already a concern for the Hoos, I think there's a lot more positive to take away than otherwise with a 15-point win. Sure.
And a good game for Tony Jones Jr.
Yeah.
Ohio State 48, Nebraska 7. I read to you an actual text thread between Dan and I. Dan at 8:26 p.m. Eastern. quote, if Ohio State scores here, I might just go to bed.
Yeah.
Tie, 8:40 p.m. Eastern. Quote, I'm going to bed regardless. Does that not sum up this Saturday night fight, Dan?
I mean, and also Nebraska's defense, I guess, at the same time. You had mentioned your concerns about Nebraska's defense, which they had actually been okay versus not super okay opponents outside, I guess, of Colorado. And we got some pushback from Nebraska fans. I think there was some accuracy to that pushback.
Sure, definitely.
And then there wasn't. And Ohio State may be the most efficient. I mean, Alabama's still there, but I don't know how good Nebraska actually is. But the degree to which Ohio State succeeded on offense, and I know Justin Fields gets a lot of attention, rightfully so. There's nobody that beats J.K. Dobbins to a corner.
No.
There's nobody that arm tackles J.K. Dobbins. It's just, he's been so good for so long, it's easy to just accept him as rote, as just a college football thing that exists, his excellence. But even against a defense that we don't love in Nebraska, my God, does he pace the Buckeyes in such an impressive way.
Yeah, and you know, some of the pushback we got from Nebraska fans pushing back on that defensive statement, they were quick to point out that actually the offense has been inconsistent. That's where that's where our focus should be.
We agree.
Yeah, and look, in this game, I was impressed with what Ohio State was able to do as a defensive unit. Again, that was a problem from a year ago. They wanted to try and fix it all offseason. So far this season, they've been really good. Adrian Martinez held to 47 yards passing and 3 interceptions.
And that's, by the way, that line is after he succeeded in the context of this game. Yeah,
absolutely. And they, like I said, they moved the ball a little bit better on the ground. But look, they were down 38-0 at half. And
they were
running the ball ain't going to climb that mountain for you when you got such a huge deficit. So kudos to Ohio State here. I kind of got caught up in the advanced numbers before this one because the advanced metrics were saying that 17 points was too high of a line. And
I think it would have been fair to expect Nebraska to have a little bit more success through the air.
Yeah.
And then Jeffrey Okuda and Jordan Fuller and the Ohio State secondary were just everywhere, even on their own butts making interceptions near the goal line. It was a complete performance. Justin Fields looked sensational going downfield. He looks fearless, which living up to all of the recruiting hype, into the right system. And I did feel bad for, I don't know if it's Kirk Herbstreit or Nebraska fans, when Nebraska did have that drive that I think ended in the butt interception, when they started just lining up under center, like, oh, they're going old school.
Yeah.
Here we go.
3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Harkening back. Yeah. I mean, Dedrick Mills was doing a good job lining up in sort of that, like, up back or whatever role, and it just didn't go.
No.
It just didn't happen for him.
Well,
so,
let me close out this game by borrowing from longtime Verballer and newly engaged friend of the show, Dane, who's been a longtime Verballer. Congratulations, my friend, on being newly engaged. He says, quote,
consider donuts for the wedding.
Consider donuts
instead of cake.
He's an Ohio State fan. Here's what he sent me. Quote, this is the best Ohio State team we've ever had, including 2014/15. A lot of players, both starters and backups, will be in the NFL, and Justin Fields is the best quarterback we've probably ever had.
Can I ask?
So he's in.
Here?
He is all in on this Ohio State team.
Is big Ohio State fan Dane, is his last name rhyming with Schmanzenbacher?
It does. It does.
It'd
not.
It'd be great.
I don't know.
That's too bad. Oh, okay.
Moving to the Pac-12, Washington 28, USC 14. Daniel, evident here that Washington had a plan for Matt Fink.
Yes.
And that plan was to confuse the bejesus out of him by throwing all sorts of new looks at him.
I mean, it was sort of BYU's plan for Keaton Slovis.
Yeah, and it worked. It worked. Fink threw 3 interceptions. The passing game never really got going. Meanwhile, really nice game for Salvin Ahmed, who came back from injury, picked up a career-high 153 yards rushing, including a long 89-yarder that went for a touchdown late in the fourth quarter, sort of put the game on ice.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say here. Clay Helton now 1-8 on the road against ranked opponents. We've got the Notre Dame game in 2 weeks, so maybe that gets to 1-9. What do you think?
Well, first, I think Washington was incredibly impressive on defense, especially in their back end. that secondary is fast, is opportunistic, reads extremely well. They started, I mean, he's been starting Cameron Williams, a true freshman at safety.
Oh, they had
those deep, deep safeties saying, sure, Matt Fink, if you can squeeze the ball into impossible windows with two high safeties the entire time, 15, 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage, yeah, go for it. Yeah, go for it. And he did sometimes, and it didn't work. And so I think you're right about Savon Ahmed having a nice game. A lot of that came on that 89, 90-yard touchdown run, which you don't see a lot of those. That's crazy impressive, an incredible play. Outside of that run, Washington wasn't moving the ball that well on the ground. Jacob Eason had a decent enough game. I thought Washington won the moments. I thought they leaned smartly. You know, the opportunistic turnovers on defense. I think they had a pick in the end zone, Elijah Molden, for Washington. And USC had opportunities. I think they popped a fumble out that Washington ended up falling on in the end zone for a touchdown. So there were moments. It could have swung a couple ways. They were a little bit sloppy. I think they had a player who was hurt get an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. They had an OPI. Like they shot themselves a little too much in the foot. They probably should have leaned on the run a little more than they were with how much Washington was just willing to give to them on the ground to Marquis Stepp, who I think is very good, and Stephen Carr had a couple nice runs. He had a longer run. So USC had opportunities. Washington got the win. I'm a little bit concerned about the creativity and downfieldiness of Washington's offense. That might be a little bit a product of sort of underwhelming receivers. Good tight ends, but underwhelming receivers. So nice win for the Huskies. Hopefully USC gets a little bit healthier.
Downfieldiness. I'm going to have to commit that one to memory. I like that.
Do it.
No, yeah. I could use that with Ian Book. Okay.
They had drops. They just, I don't know. And USC's defense is pretty good. They have the guy who, I'm going to try it again, Ty. Paula Ie Nateote?
Globe? Did I catch a Globe in there?
You did not catch a Globe.
Okay.
Paula Ie Nateote with Evan Weaver in terms of scariness at linebacker in the conference.
Well, you mentioned Evan Weaver. Let's talk about the Cal Golden Bears. They lose 24-17 on Friday night to ASU. Let me start with ASU because this was a nice road win for the Sun Devils. Nice game for Eno Benjamin, who had three rushing touchdowns, his 11th career 100-yard game. Another solid effort from Jaden Daniels, who was playing on a bum ankle. I think he's going to be really good.
Yeah, I like him. He's sharp.
They didn't convert all their chances either. So you could argue that their 24 points is frustrating in some sense. They, I think, missed a few field goals and dropped some passes, the whole nine yards. But
against a really good Cal defense.
Against
though.
A really all good Cal considered. Defense. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The really frustrating bit, though, was for Cal because things were going fine until their quarterback, Chase Garbers, hurt his right shoulder in the second quarter.
Yeah.
And then the offense sort of stopped existing, Dan. At the time of his exit, was 9 of 12 for 117 yards and a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Then they turned it over to Devon Monster.
Devon Monster, not a great night.
5 of 14 passing with an interception. Cal had just 2.8 yards per play with him in there. And to further the point, here is what Cal's drive chart looked like during the during the Monster mash, okay?
Okay.
Interception and then a touchdown. A touchdown drive, which, mind you, featured zero passing plays.
Yeah.
Punt, punt, field goal, downs, downs.
Okay. That's probably not going to get it done against a pretty good ASU team. Who, by the way, ASU, two road games, both of which were against ranked teams. Both came out with wins.
Yep.
Second one, you don't like to see it, with Chase Garbers going down, who I think he was throwing some dimes out there. When he was in there, he was throwing some nice balls. And so Cal just doesn't have the margin for error to deal with injuries at key places. But hate to see it. It looks, I haven't seen a prognosis on Garbers because I have Oregon and Eugene next week.
Right.
It might be a collarbone type situation, which would have him out for a while. Hope it's not. Hope it's like a weird Singer situation, whatever. But very nice win for ASU. Really impressed with them.
ASU kicking and gouging in the mud and the blood and the beer. Let's go a little Johnny Cash.
Oh, I like it.
Elsewhere in the Pac-12, we had Utah over Wazoo, Stanford by 3 over Oregon State, and Arizona by 3 over UCLA. Anything jump out to you in either of those three games?
Yeah, Tyler Huntley's a full-on dude. He was doing everything, still with a pretty whack offensive line in front of him.
Nice.
Yeah, but I like guys like Samson Nakua, and I think it's Brian Thompson generating bigger plays at receiver. You know, it's still, was it Devontae Henry Cole stepped in nicely because Zach Moss is still out. So really nice win for Utah. Washington State, obviously, we mentioned this, an altitude letdown spot after the giant shootout against UCLA and going down last second, and just an incredible choke job last week. Really nice for Utah to jump back on a decent Pac-12 team after losing to SC.
Also, the Oregon State offense, I know, was just going up against the Stanford defense that hasn't been all that impressive this year.
No.
But to log 500 yards, to look at the box score and see the kind of numbers that Jake Luton and Isaiah Hodgins are
putting
up. Dude,
Isaiah Hodgins is so good.
10 catches, 162 yards. I don't know if he's on the dude watch list or dude alert list this week.
No, he's a dude. And the big thing, too, is he's like the Eric Decker Memorial Award, which I don't believe Eric Decker has passed on. But, the receiver, you're like, yeah, that guy is scary dangerous and could start for a ton of teams, and we don't have many other weapons. And he just keeps getting open and keeps making plays, which, you know, he'll get drafted too low probably, and like all of a sudden he's like, that fourth round pick for the Texans is an all pro? What? Okay.
Yeah, Oregon State kind of showed fight here. They scored a touchdown in their last four drives. They tied the game up with about 2 minutes left. So they lose, but I thought a pretty good effort here.
For sure. And Stanford does not start KJ Costello, still, I guess, nursing some injuries. Davis Mills comes in, and it's good. Davis Mills is good. And I think had a touchdown catch, so showed off a little athleticism. So nice for Stanford to get back in the win column.
Let me go to the Big 12, Dan. We had Baylor edging out Iowa State 23-21. This was a hot one, Dan, like 7 inches from the midday sun.
Oh, don't do that.
Heat index nearly 100 degrees.
Yeah.
Red shirt freshman kicker John Mayers.
Yeah, came up big.
John Mayer.
Almost John Mayers. Yeah, would you say his kicking is a wonderland?
A game-winning... Just wait for it, Dan.
Oh, no, you're going to do something.
Just wait for it, buddy. Game-winning 38-yard field goal with 21 seconds left gives Baylor a 23-21 lead. Big win for Baylor, of course, which, as you know, for a long time, given the situation, was really slow dancing in a burning room through the dark days of the program. And ever since, they've been dreaming with a broken heart, just waiting for the world to change.
Oh, no.
They get a big win here at home, 23-21.
Ty, I really thought your analysis could have used more gravity, but
that was okay. This is a low point in the solid verbal.
I actually, so a good friend of Jody with an I, her and her husband, unbeknownst to me, are Mayer super fans.
Okay.
Like, diving for the set list after the show, getting goosebumps just talking about the show. Like, his set list was like, look at my arm, I'm getting goosebumps. Look at my arm, I'm just talking about the set. It was everything I wanted. And I was like, would you like a turkey sandwich? How was I supposed to? And so this works out really nicely because that was fresh on mind. Iowa State decided to start playing in the fourth quarter. Furiously comes back behind Brock Purdy. Baylor tries to give this game away.
They blew a 20-point lead
near the end.
A 20-point lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And good for, what was it, Tyquan Thornton and Denzel Mims were great downfield for Charlie Brewer. And a very nice win for Baylor after, I would definitely assume, a disappointing fourth quarter and a disappointing loss to Iowa State in Ames last season.
Bears now are 4-0. They're on the road next week at K-State. I'm actually interested to see if there's any kind of letdown effect, because this is a big emotional win and almost went sideways there in the fourth quarter.
I mean, there was a letdown effect in the fourth quarter.
There was a letdown effect in the fourth quarter, so why not on the road next week in Manhattan, Kansas? Otherwise, though, if you look at what Baylor's done, if you look at their remaining schedule, you don't have to get too creative to find 9-3, maybe 10-2.
What does their schedule look like? I don't have it in front of me.
It's very palatable.
Oh, okay.
Very palatable. I don't have it in front of me either, but I looked at it earlier, and it's doable. Like, it could happen.
Somebody emailed us to suggest that Bear mascots, like obviously Baylor has, with every win, should get fatter and fatter.
Oh, I like that.
Like, it's a bear preparing for the off-season hibernation, eating all that delicious winning salmon.
Right.
I don't know if the Baylor Bears can either arrange for larger and larger actual bears to show up at games or just somehow inflate. You know how those sumo suits?
The bear sumo suit, yeah.
Like, I just consider it because Cal might not be rolling with the type of momentum as we thought they might in the win column. But Baylor, if you're high on them, who am I to say that they won't?
I mean, I've long been a fan of just the illustration that is the Baylor bear. It's a very healthy-looking bear.
And long down on Maine's black bear.
Very down.
Yeah.
Very down. It's almost a rabid bear, which I don't know if that's a thing, but...
It's a strung-out rabid bear.
Get that bear a cheeseburger, man. Okay. Oklahoma 55, Texas Tech 16, another monster day for your Heisman frontrunner, Jalen Hurts, 17 of 24, 415 yards, 3 touchdowns through the air. Another 70 and a touchdown on the ground. 485 in total from scrimmage for Jalen Hurts, who connected with CeeDee Lamb 7 times for 185 yards and 3 touchdowns. Oklahoma Daniel looks virtually unstoppable. This may be the best version of Jalen Hurts we've seen now in his time as a college football player.
Something I couldn't help but think about watching, I just scrubbed through this game pretty quickly because it was not much of a game. You know, Texas Tech having issues at quarterback, Jet Duffy comes in. What level of quarterback right now could spend an offseason in Norman? You know, they've developed offensive linemen and running backs and receivers really, really well. They probably have the best offensive mind in the sport, calling plays and organizing this offense. What level of quarterback right now, if they spend an offseason in Norman, could become full-on impressive in that offense? Like, could Tommy DeVito?
I was going to say Puma Pass. What could Puma Pass do?
Puma Pass. I mean, because Jalen Hurts went there already a high-level talent. Like, it was not a matter of, like, will he succeed? It was just the degree to which he'll succeed at Oklahoma. No. But if Brandon Peters showed up in Norman, if Jarrett Garantano, if Skylar Thompson.
Let's not get crazy with Jarrett Garantano.
If Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who had a nice game against Wazoo, if Jack Cohn, I think, would be the test. Ian Book. If Ian Book took a grad transfer to Oklahoma.
Well, Ian Book's already pretty good as a college quarterback.
Right,
there's a limiting factor to his skill set, but...
But they're actually in... Jalen Hurts is a better version of Ian Book was when he was at Alabama. In that, it was a lot of shorter stuff. It was avoiding turnovers. It was making plays with his legs. And now, suddenly, he's a lot more confident going downfield and growing into his own.
Yeah, I just think that maybe we're finding out how good Jalen Hurts has been all along. When he played on the Alabama team...
I mean, he was really good for Alabama.
Right, when he played on the Alabama side of things, he was kind of like the target for criticism. Even though he was still really good, now he's kind of out of that environment. He's in a place with Lincoln Riley where they're clearly building a system around him, at least for 1 year.
Sort of, yeah.
And it's been dynamic. It's been unstoppable.
Ian Book has been good at home. He had the Georgia game. He's been decent. He doesn't go downfield. That's all it is. He's the Toyota Tercel at Daytona.
Like, the bookification. It's the book raid.
Yeah, okay. The book raid.
Oklahoma State, 26. Kansas State 13, another monster game for Chuba Hubbard.
Oh,
get this.
God.
25 carries, 296 yards, and a touchdown. Now, he had a long 84-yard run in there, which is going to skew the average, but it's still fun sometimes to do the math.
Sure.
And say aloud that he averaged nearly 12 yards per carry, Dan.
I mean, if you get rid of that run, he's still going for 212.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable performance by him.
Yeah, Spencer Sanders, not super consistent, made some mistakes.
Yep.
Redshirt freshman, whatever. Kansas State was just worked over, especially up front. And this was an Oklahoma State team. I don't believe they were down a couple of starters on their offensive line. And the Chuba Hubbard experience is great because he does a lot of his work between tackles. And you're never sure if he's full-on fast, but everybody else is just a little slower.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's good enough. If you're faster than the guy that you're running from a bear with, just be faster than him. That's great. So that's the Chuba Hubbard experience. And it's, again, hard to talk about the top group of running backs in college football. I think he's leading the country in rushing right now without, I mean, it's Hubbard, Taylor, Dobbins, you know, Darius Anderson sort of there, A.J. Dillon. But that top group, that threesome, I think, stands alone.
You know what I just thought of?
Yeah.
we need like a counterbalance to the little bit of Baker Mayfield in somebody. Like, can we say that Spencer Sanders had a little bit of Trevor Knight in him?
Oh man, I don't know who that's more insulting to. I guess I think Spencer Sanders throws a nicer ball than Trevor Knight does.
We'll have to think about that.
Okay. So do you think Spencer Sanders has a little bit of Sam Howell in him?
No.
Are we going like just the, are we doing iterations now? I'm okay with it.
We're going to have to workshop this a little bit more. It's a little too early.
Oklahoma State fans, tell us who you think Spencer Sanders has a little bit of him, a little bit of to him of, I don't know the grammar, but yeah, he was okay.
K-State was 1 of 13 on third downs here, which isn't great.
Really nice defensive performance as well.
And to close out the Big 12, we had TCU 51, Kansas 14. Where do you want to go next? What conference?
Cure for the Common Offense, by the way. Your Kansas Jayhawks.
That's right.
Let's go to the SEC because we have not talked about a very, very nice night for Bo Nix and Seth Williams. And I am going to plant my flag right now. And because he was injured against Oregon, I didn't really fully form this opinion until now. Auburn should be running the all-motion Anthony Schwartz offense. This is a subset of Jane Costin's all-PI offense where Anthony Schwartz should be in motion every play because the threat of him touching the ball should terrify everybody, and he should get the ball all the time. And all of a sudden, it opens things up for Bo Nix in the RPO game and his feet. And I was so impressed with the steps that Bo Nix took stepping forward. He was downfield really well.
Welcome to the bandwagon, my friend. It's good to have you aboard.
It infuriates. Well, no, he wasn't good these past few weeks.
I've been high. Only one member of the broadcasting duo has had the cojones and the foresight.
Everybody looks good compared to Ian Book. I know.
And go all in on Bo Nix. I love him.
Okay, that's fine. He actually produced and actually came through for your faith and hope that was weirdly misguided. He was really good. He was really good against State, and they had no answer. I thought the Bulldogs were going to be better on defense. They looked to be a top 30, 35, 40 defense coming into this game. They definitely weren't, especially on the ground. Booby Whitlow was everywhere early, and just Seth Williams is looking more and more like a true number one receiver. So a really impressive all-around performance. And I thought Garrett Schrader was actually pretty good for Mississippi State on the road in a tough place. It's just, you can't, I think it was 21-0. You can't spot a team 3 touchdowns. You can't do it.
Well, I mean, they spotted them 33 points at half. It was 42-9 when they went in at halftime. The highlight of this game, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention, Booby Whitlow scored on Auburn's first play from scrimmage. It was a 30-yarder. And, you know, he scored, so it was a nice run. And
sort of pushed out of the corner as he's scoring, yeah.
He slides through the end zone and crashes into Jack. Jack, it's Mississippi State's live bulldog who was on the sidelines.
Yeah, bully.
By now, I'm sure you've seen the highlights of this, but if you haven't...
Is he okay?
He's okay, both the pup and the player.
Oh, I figured the player had padding. But good. It was right to the flank. It was to a good spot. It wasn't to the face. It was right to a thicker part of the bulldog. So
yeah.
Absorbs contact, bouncing back nicely. Probably the most impressive part of Mississippi State's defense.
Very much a harbinger of things to come in this one as they lose 56-23. Auburn, by the way, on the road. We're going to talk about them next week. They're in the swamp against Florida in what should be a pretty big game.
Tommy Stevens, by the way, goes down early. So Garrett Schrader didn't even start and was good.
Absolutely. Let's shift to Alabama here real quick.
Okay.
All too often, we're just reading off stats when it comes to Alabama. This game capsule won't be too much different, but Alabama wins 59-31 over Ole Miss. They actually trailed for the first time this year.
They did.
In this football game. Not for long, though. Bama is basically doing the thing that we used to do in the old NCAA video game. And that is just trying to set absurd records every time you go out there. In this one, Devontae Smith caught 11 balls for a school record, 274 yards and 5 touchdowns. He had 221 of those before halftime. Meanwhile, Tua Tagovailoa throws 6 touchdown passes, ran for a 7th, also a school record. He threw for 418 yards, Dan. I don't really know what else to say about Alabama here. I guess you could try to criticize the fact that the defense gave up 31 points, but Otherwise, the offense is turbocharged, superpowered, doesn't show any signs of stopping here. They're 5-0, headed into a bye week. After the bye, they're going to go to Kyle Field and rip the arms and legs off of A&M. Where are we supposed to go as a podcast as it relates to describing this Alabama team?
Well, one, I thought Ole Miss did a very nice job offensively of moving John Reese Plumlee, true freshman, around. He was running a lot. He was running a true Rich Rod offense. Almost looked like the single wing with how much he was trying to get to the edge and test Alabama's linebackers. And that's a beat up linebacking core without Dylan Moses. So, all things considered, I thought Ole Miss's offensive game plan was, I mean, you like the word pesky. It was very pesky to Alabama. Nothing big picture worrisome, because I don't think teams are going to be running at Alabama exactly like that, that can beat them over four quarters. But tip of the hat to Ole Miss's offense for continuing. And a lot of that was later in the game when it was well decided. But story here is Alabama. It's the offense. Najee Harris was good. They didn't run the ball a ton. And Tua and Devontae Smith. I mean, Devontae Smith may be the fourth best receiver this team.
Crazy.
Behind Judy and Ruggs and Waddle, and Miller Forrestall has been very good for them. He has a longer touchdown catch. It's waves. It's waves. What are you supposed to do?
Texas A&M, 31. Arkansas, 27. So let me say two quick things about this game.
Yeah.
One, it is a rivalry. And four of the last 5 years, it's been exactly a 7-point game.
Yeah.
So it's just that kind of thing, this rivalry game. And two, there's a pretty good chance, at least A&M's out of gas, because they played both Clemson and Auburn in the first month of the season.
Sure.
That being said, Arkansas is real bad, Dan. They are real bad. Like, this shouldn't have been this close, right?
Probably not. I don't know how good Texas A&M is, though. We have these expectations. They have a number next to their name with 22, 23 in the country. I don't know how much that actually means a month into the season. I love that there are rankings, but I don't know how seriously they should be taken. Up front, on both sides of the ball, I don't love Texas A&M. I know they did a good job containing Travis Etienne, but now he seems more containable because of Clemson's weird offensive stagnancies. Not a word, probably. I thought Arkansas showed fight. Nick Starkle goes down, gets hurt, and Ben Hicks comes in and he makes plays, at least. I just think you can push Texas A&M around a little bit, and they can't get much going on the ground without Jeshua Corbin out for the season. And Kellen Mond seems to be running for his life. He had a bad pick in the end zone, but otherwise, he was okay. Made plays with his legs. I don't think Texas A&M is that good. That's all.
Fair enough. South Carolina, 24, Kentucky, 7. Tavian Feaster, Rico Dowdle, both over 100 yards for South Carolina. Defense also did a good job here. Made it tough on Sawyer Smith, who was just 11 of 32 passing, had 90 yards and a pick.
I have a theory about Kentucky's offense with Sawyer Smith.
Oh.
I don't think they're very good.
No.
Okay.
I think we're finding that out.
Yeah.
Elsewhere in SEC play, we had Florida blanking Towson 38-0. Nice day for Kyle Trask. Only missed two passes on the day, which is a positive sign as they head into this big game against Auburn.
Sure.
And Vandy, 24, NIU 18.
Get in the win column. Good job, Vandy.
All right. Let's go to the Big Ten quick.
Let's do it.
Wisconsin, 24. Northwestern, 15, huh?
Mm-hmm. Tight. You know the old adage, you don't dress for the job you have, but you dress for the job you want.
The one you want, yeah.
Wisconsin dressed for the offensive game they wanted. They visibly looked horrendous in their uniforms, in their pantyhose pants.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think their offense was outscored by Northwestern's offense.
They scored one offensive touchdown. Two of their touchdowns came on defensive scores, a fumble recovery in the end zone, and then on a pick six. I didn't watch this game for an extended period of time.
Good for you.
But when I flipped it on, it felt like the TV sucked all the positive energy out of my living room. That's the kind of game this was to watch.
Yeah, it was a Debbie Downer of a game. Jonathan Taylor scored 5 or 6 minutes into the game, and it looked like Wisconsin was going to just very slowly and emphatically run away from this one, and they didn't score for the rest of the game on offense into the end zone. So it's it's one of those games where you can say, yeah, Northwestern plays good defense, and they mucked it up, and Wisconsin came out with the win. They lost this game last year, so that's a nice turnaround. But you got to be a little bit better if we're going to start talking about you in that playoff conversation. At home, against Northwestern, got to be better.
Very quickly, regarding Pat Fitzgerald and his offense.
It's such garbage.
Is it sort of like he's insisting on using his old iPhone 3G just because it still dials out?
I mean, that's very appropriate for Pat Fitzgerald, who is like the 30,000 people on Twitter talking about our game. Face mash or snapbook. First of all, Pat Fitzgerald, not that old.
No.
Second of all, they've had the same offensive coordinator for a decade, Mike McCall. And the Northwestern offense has actively held back Northwestern's chance of winning games because they've consistently had good defenses. The offense has actively held them back since 2012, something like that.
I mean, it's a tradition unlike any other at this point in college football.
I know it's nitpicking because Northwestern shouldn't be a pretty good team year in and year out, and they are, but at a certain point, Ty,
I know.
That's my phrase of choice.
If he went out tomorrow and hired Andy Ludwig, you'd be pretty happy about that, wouldn't you?
It's an improvement. It's an improvement, which is weird to say, because, I mean, Andy Ludwig had a nice night against Wazoo, but there are so many just up-and-coming, interesting FCS coaches or small G5 coaches that are doing, like, and Northwestern scoring 10, 12, 15, 9, 19. It's a waste. They're wasting really nice defenses.
Penn State 59, Maryland nothing. I was caught off guard by this one. Did not expect this.
limb from limb.
I know. It may be that we overvalued Maryland after that hot start.
Oh, absolutely we did.
It could be that we overvalued the Terrapins a little bit.
I would do it again, Ty. I'm never going to apologize for being excited about big performances early in the season. Never.
Me neither. I still have very real questions about who's running the ball if Penn State needs to get 2 yards on a 4th and 2 late in the game against Ohio State. But Sean Clifford throwing for about 400, 3 touchdowns, that's a good way to keep me from worrying about it in the interim. I'm okay with that.
You should be okay with that. The Maryland defense probably isn't that good.
Nope.
It was a cure for a common offense kind of moment after what Penn State looked like at home against Pitt, who's a pretty good defense. I thought the story was more Penn State's defense, just completely overwhelming Maryland. Micah Parsons, I think, gets ejected for targeting in this game. Yep. They don't miss a beat. You know, they're bringing in their 2s, their 3s. They're probably their 4s by the end of this game. Probably walk-ons on the field. And it was total and complete limb from limb, and if I may, Ty. Interception, punt, interception, punt, 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 downs, punt, fumble! Will they score? End of game. So, that was Friday night.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I did a bunch of B12 shots to get ready for that.
You're all palmeroed up today. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not here to talk about the past.
Michigan State 40, Indiana 31.
Almost gave this one away.
They really did. It sort of bothers me that I overlooked Michigan State in a look-ahead spot here because they've got Ohio State on deck. They almost lost this one to Indiana.
Indiana also almost got small-balled in a loss. Yeah.
Indiana seemed to crack the code on the Michigan State defense, which we've been touting, at least I've been touting as elite, all season long. The good news for State is that it's been 2 straight weeks now where they scored more than 30 points.
Hey!
And the offense in both weeks has answered the call in big situations. In this one, Brian Lewerke went over 300 yards, made some big plays. If you're a Michigan State fan, that's the missing piece. You need to get more of that. Obviously not more 31 points to Indiana performances from the defense, but curious to see how things transpire next week against a really, truly, honest-to-goodness good offense in Ohio State as they come to town.
Yeah, maybe it was a look-ahead spot. Brian Lewerke was sort of do everything. He goes exactly 300. Not crazy accurate, had some down moments, but, you know, all the same, it's Michigan State scoring 40 in a Big Ten win, so that's fine. I think Ohio State's going to be very comfortable against Michigan State.
We had Michigan 52-0 over Rutgers. We had Iowa 48-3 over Middle Tennessee.
Yep.
And we had the quietest 4-0 team in all the land, the Minnesota Golden Gophers, 38-31 over the Purdue Boilermakers to close out our Big Ten for week five.
Yeah, some booth movement. So maybe that'll be a fantasy thing for next year. Josh Gattis comes down to the field for Michigan. Booth movement. Up to the booth, down to the field. Down to the field, up to the booth movement. It sounds dirty. It's not.
No.
Minnesota, a really nice win. Tanner Morgan was incredibly accurate, made a ton of plays. I'm not coming off of my stance that he is more of a tryhard than an actual really good quarterback, but he was really good against a bad Purdue pass defense, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that Rashad Bateman is probably one of the best five or six receivers in the country, just housing short balls. And so I think the yardage is a little inflated, but Minnesota, 4-0, hard to complain.
Moving over to close things out with the ACC, we had Wake Forest 27, BC 24. As we've said for a decade now, this is a Wake Forest show. That's how we started. Go back and read on our about page.
Yep.
We continue to worship at the altar of Jamie Newman, who had another baller game.
Mm-hmm.
Not so secretly decent Wake keeps on rolling. They are 5-0, headed into a bye week. 17 of 24 on third downs in this game.
That's ridiculous.
How do you even get 24 third downs, Dan?
Small ball.
Small ball.
A lot of small ball, but 17 of 24 is great, obviously. BC actually did a good job. I think the game was somewhat tied at halftime. Wake jumped on them, and A.J. Dillon had a really nice game in a losing effort, so Wake needs to clean some things up rush defense-wise, but yeah, I'm in on Wake. I'm in on Wake in a non-Maryland way.
In a non-Maryland way, fair enough.
Yes.
FSU 31, NC State 13. Daniel.
Yeah.
Alex Hornibrook starts in place of an injured James Blackman. Came in last week, threw a couple touchdown passes. In this one, throws for a career high 316 yards, three touchdowns. And I got to be honest, I have not heard much from Florida State fans who tormented me, visited my house.
Oh my gosh, what?
When I said that Alex Hornibrook may be an upgrade over James Blackman. Haven't heard much from him.
James Blackman's still beat up. There was some gamesmanship, I think, of he came out with the ones. James Blackman, he was the announced starter.
He warms up with
the ones, and then Alex Hornibrook ends up starting the game. It's a very strange, and also it's a very normal situation where you look at the line, and you're like, yes, he had a very nice game. He kept it clean. And then you actually watch the game, and it's the most Alex Hornibrook game possible. Yes, he made plays. He made above-average Power 5 quarterback-ish plays. He found the end zone. He was reasonably accurate. Also, he made some horrific throws that he was lucky weren't returned for 93 yards for touchdowns or something like that.
Hornibrook, Hornibrook.
There are those moments where you're like, what is this guy doing? And it worked out this week, and he was good for Florida State, and they won an ACC game by double digits, so big net positive for the Noles. But it's a Cam Akers thing.
Than a Hornibrook thing.
Yeah, Ontario Wilson was also very nice.
And let me just say, the confidence that Hornibrook would be better than Blackman, it's come down a little bit.
Okay.
Still, since we've seen him out there. But still, a win's a win.
A win's a win, and he made plays. It's just the ultimate of the best of Alex Hornibrook experience-wise.
Duke 45, Virginia Tech 10.
Oh, God.
At home, 10.
We're going to have to keep having Virginia Tech conversations, aren't we?
What a mess. They lost by 35 at home, their worst home loss since 1974. They need four more wins now to get bowl eligible, and I looked at the schedule. I don't know if that's going to happen.
This happened at home. No. They lost by 35 at home.
That's a tough place to play, too.
To Duke at Lane Stadium.
I know.
And trying to run the ball constantly, I get, but you're down. And it was just... I watched this game pretty quickly this morning, and I did not like what I saw from the Hokies at all. And meanwhile, Quinn Harris is an impressive do-everything, not going downfield a ton, but do-everything for Duke. And Duke, very quiet, 3-1. Good for them.
And to close things out in the Big Ten, we had Syracuse winning big over Holy Cross. Pitt eking one out over the Delaware Blue Hens, 17-14, and Temple knocking off Georgia Tech, 24-2.
That's I mean, you like weird scores.
That's a very weird score.
I don't know that we'll get another 24-2 this year. Yes, I think, I mean, I don't have much to add. It was Nick Patty starting for Pitt and not Kenny Pickett, so I did not watch any of Delaware Pitt, so maybe that had something to do with it. I know it was a slow start. And good for Temple for getting back at Jeff Collins.
You want to give me your dudes for week 5?
I would love to give you. Whoa, give
me some dudes. I need some
Rashad dudes. Bateman, obviously. Chuba, who I think we should be retiring pretty close here. Devontae Smith, obviously Alabama. Michael Penix with a nice small ball performance against Michigan State in a losing effort. CeeDee Lamb, who's great for Oklahoma. The entirety of Washington's secondary. Julian Okwara, very productive for Notre Dame. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yep, you got it.
Bo Nix, Tyler Huntley, Chase Young was harassing Adrian Martinez and the entire Nebraska offense. Chaz Surratt, love a good
quarterback-turned-linebacker. He's back.
2019's Joel Lanning was all over the place against Clemson. A.J. Dillon in a losing effort for Boston College. Omar Bayless, wide receiver, Arkansas State, huge day against Troy.
Red Wolves.
Isaiah Hodgins, I mentioned as somebody, just the Eric Decker Memorial Award-winning receiver. There were other non-Power 5 games, Ty. I know you're asking for dudes, but real quick, may I?
Please.
Memphis, very impressive on offense coming back and beating Navy after Navy runs all over them in the first half. Air Force with a nice win over San Jose State. Obviously, the Spartans coming off of a win over an SEC team, but couldn't quite keep that train rolling. The civil conflict. Not much of a conflict.
No.
UConn just hammers UConn. UCF. Also, UConn hammered UConn, I suppose. That's accurate. Toledo, after somewhat of a slow start at home in the Holy Toledo game, they beat BYU. Miami of Ohio, a nice win over Buffalo, a Buffalo team who I think is pretty good. Western Michigan's been taking lumps this year, but they beat Central Michigan. FAU, nice win for Lane Kiffin over Charlotte. App State. I did not realize Ted Roof is their defensive coordinator. That was a new thing I learned, but they beat Coastal Carolina. UMass. Okay. They win in the Wonder Dome. UMass Akron, both fully beaten teams coming into this game. Southern Miss, we mentioned this as strong watch continues. I think Pat Forty used that phrase. South Florida's not that good. Cincy hammers a decent Marshall team. I am impressed by that. Arkansas State Troy was a really fun shootout that the Red Wolves end up taking in the end. Otherwise, I'm trying to look. I know Rice, Louisiana Tech was close and goes to overtime, and La Tech took that. I'm not sure if we're supposed to say La Tech anymore. Wyoming with a very nice win over UNLV. Houston, without De'Aaron King, manages to beat a pretty good North Texas team, at least we think. Fresno gets back to 500. They beat New Mexico State. And breathlessly to finish this all out, Hawaii just completely and on the road and thoroughly takes it to Nevada, who both has now, they've lost to Hawaii in a major way and Oregon in a major way. The Nevada defense is able to be pushed around if you're keeping track at home. That's everything I have.
All right. Well, thank you to one and all for tuning into the show this week. We will be back on Tuesday morning where we set sail again on a little show we like to call the Twos Cruise. We've had wonderful suggestions from people who are into that marine life, helping guide really the ship here on what we should do every Tuesday. So we'll talk more college football, put all of this in context. Again, that's going to be Tuesday morning around 6 a.m. Eastern when that drops. We will also be back on Thursday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern to preview all of the Week 6 action. Got some awesome matchups that I'm excited to talk about and preview with you, Mr. Rubenstein. In the meantime, I believe you have a flight to catch.
I do. My flight's been delayed by 15 minutes. Can we get a quick preview of Week 6? What's to come? And we have the Twos Cruise first. We're going to talk big picture stuff. Pull up the Week 6 menu on this fine restaurant that is the Solid Verbal.
We've got Iowa, Michigan.
That's early.
Which is early.
Okay. That'll be a nice bellwether game. Yep.
We've got Auburn against Florida midday.
Hell yeah. Can't wait.
We've got Texas on the road at West Virginia, which I'm not expecting a whole lot out of, but sometimes that game's been weird.
Texas off of a bye. I think West Virginia also off of a bye. Yeah.
We've got Michigan State against Ohio State at night.
Mm-hmm.
We've got...
It's in Columbus?
In Columbus.
Okay.
We've got Cal at Oregon, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, hope Chase Garbers is healthy.
Hope he's healthy. Washington at Stanford, I guess, doesn't quite have the punch that we thought it might have. But those are, I guess, the headliners that we'll be discussing.
Okay, great. Can't wait. Two's Cruise, preview, just me, you, keeping it real. Love it.
Baylor on the road at K-State. Could be interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
That's all.
Thank you to everyone for tuning in. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Don't forget we're out there on social media. And if you want to keep the conversation going, solidverbal.reddit.com. Subreddit's doing really well.
Yeah.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildebrand, thanks again for tuning into the show. We will catch you all in just a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace. I need more B12.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.